Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
Sawtooth Mountain, somewhere in western Idaho, and from her secret studio buried in her dining room in Albuquerque, New Mexico, you are listening to LA Talk Radio's very own Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, and I'm looking at my co-host, the charming, the ubiquitous, the quirky Bobby Jean Bell. Hey, Bobby.
How do you spell that word, ubiquitous? Ubiquitous.
You know, I'm just running out of adjectives for you. So, I mean, I'm going to start recycling a bit pretty quick.
I'm doing great. Looking forward to this evening with our guest.
Oh, me too. What a great guest. Before we get started, though, I do want to have an announcement. Our other co-host, Richard Polinelli's father, recently passed away. He is either on his way to or in Killeen, Texas right now. And Richard, we wish you the very, very best. Our thoughts and prayers are with you, and we love you, brother. So take care and be gone as long as you got to be, because we'll be here covered for you. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, LA Talk Radio is like, they're like our home. And this is going to be a pre-commercial commercial. If you are someone who wants to be a host on a radio, you cannot go wrong. So pick up your laptop, pick up your desktop, pick up whatever computer you got to use. Go to latalkradio.com and go to be a host. And fill out the form and get it to Sam, and he can fix you right up. And before you know it, boom, you're a host of your own very own live radio show that goes out live weekly. So right now we are going out live to hundreds of thousands of people worldwide. So our guest, Kathy, if you can handle that, we're ready.
I can handle it.
Okay. So, you know, tonight's first guest, well, actually our only guest tonight, and we're going to break format a little. We won't be asking you about her process a lot because she has so much to talk about. She is the retiree from the FBI after 26 years. She has recently written her very first book. It is called It's Not About the Gun. Please welcome to the Writer's Block, directly from the coal mines of Kentucky to the California sun, to New York, to Washington, D.C., and back to New York again, Ms. Kathy. Go ahead. What is it?
Stearman. That was the first trick question.
Who am I today?
I don't remember.
I did a lot of undercover work, so I have to remember who I am today.
That's right. Hi, Kathy. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hello, LA. I have to say, though, I lived in California off and on for over 20 years, and I left my heart in San Francisco. So I apologize to Southern California, but I love San Francisco and Monterey and Santa Cruz and Carmel and that whole area.
Oh, yeah. I left a tennis shoe in San Francisco. So I don't know that I ever can go back and get it, but it's there someplace.
That's replaceable.
Oh, I know. Your book is not about the gun. It's a fascinating, fascinating read. And it just reads real fast. It's like a really good novel, only it's not. It's a true story. Of course, the names are changed to protect the innocent, and you got a lot of redacting in, not a lot, but some. You can pretty much guess what they say. So if you leave it up to your imagination, you can pretty much guess what the redactions are. But your book starts from the time that you actually are a little girl in Kentucky and growing up. Oh, my gosh, your father must have been horrible living with him.
He was quite
A love hate?
It was a love hate. Yeah. I mean, He was, you know, I explain in the book that he was this huge man, 6'6", and he'd been to World War II. And like I say in the book, you know, he experienced PTSD like a lot of veterans. And he took it out on the people around him, like a lot of veterans do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we even got help for it after Vietnam, but it's still people took it out on their loved ones.
Oh, so. Yeah.
But you made it out, and you went to the FBI Academy, and there's this great story about your range officer fixing the sight on your pistol. I told you in a little text earlier that you should have whacked him upside the head with a board. I mean, that was cruel.
He was a misogynist. He hated women, and that's just all there was to it. And I don't put this in that story, but after I graduated Quantico and went to my first field office, which was in Alexandria, Virginia, I had gone back to Quantico for a conference. And Tommy is the name of the guy. It's not his real name, but he was my firearms instructor. And I saw him walking down the hall. And I said, "Hey, Tommy, what are you up to these days?" You know, just sarcastically as I could. It's like, "I'm graduated. You can't do anything to me now." And he looked at me and he said, "Well, Stearman, just got another woman kicked out of the FBI, got doing my job."
Oh, geez.
So he just hated women. That's all there was to it.
Yeah.
The sad thing about that is how much great talent it never saw the light of day for the organization, you know, because of that kind of an attitude.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I can only imagine the number of women that got kicked out for some technicality or other, but it really was just because Tommy wanted them out.
Yeah. That's got to be a tough pill to swallow. You know, you get kicked out of the FBI because they're messing with your gun sights.
Yeah. Well, but the good thing is, see, I grew up in Kentucky.
Well, yeah, Kentucky.
I knew a little bit about guns. Everybody got guns. Uh-huh. The sights were off, but I also knew how to correct it without having the sights corrected. But think of those women who maybe came from a city or an area where they didn't have guns and they didn't know how to fight back.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, you had some great assignments. I mean, you were in Arlington and New York.
Alexandria.
Yeah, with New York, which I'm sure you didn't particularly care for. I don't think anybody that goes to New York really cares for it. But you got to go to Monterey Language School.
You got to be assigned to
San Francisco. Holy mackerel.
Yeah.
And then you got to go to India.
I did.
Well, I don't know how much of a bonus that is, but...
I loved it. I loved India because I got to cover all of India and so many of the surrounding countries. And India is a love-hate relationship. You love it or you hate it. And I'm one of those people that loved it.
Huh. It's good. I mean, it's so crowded, though, isn't it? I mean, really.
Oh, it's 1.1 billion people in a country a third the size of the United States. So, yeah. I mean, there are people everywhere. Everywhere. Yeah.
Come on, Bobby.
Jump in. Oh, well, you know, I don't usually jump in this quickly.
I mean, I can keep talking if you guys want.
Well, there is so much to cover. I guess maybe first off, can you tell us what a legal attaché or a legate is, where did you hold those positions?
A legal attaché is the head of an FBI office overseas, and we shorten it to legat, so that you don't have to always say legal attaché. And most people don't realize that the FBI actually works overseas, but we do. There's over 70 offices around the world, and the FBI legat offices are always inside a U.S. embassy. And some legat offices cover only one country. Some cover only one city. But when I was in New Delhi, I covered all of India, Nepal, Bangladesh, Bhutan, Sri Lanka, and the Maldives. And I worked with each of those American embassies in all those countries. So I had to travel to all those countries frequently to work with my counterparts, my foreign counterparts in all those countries. And then later in China, I covered all of China and Mongolia. And again, I worked at the American Embassy in Beijing and in Mongolia I worked with my counterparts, my U.S. counterparts in Ulaanbaatar, which is the capital of Mongolia.
Fascinating.
And Beijing had to have been an assignment and a half. I can't imagine. I mean, I worked with a Chinese company for 20 some years, and I just never could trust them. So, but you know, you still work for them.
You know, I have to say, of all of the countries that I worked with, China was the most difficult. They would only help if it served their best interests. There was no mutual interest concerned. But that was actually working with the government, you know, the people from the communist government. The people of China were incredibly friendly, and I could speak Chinese. And so whenever my husband and I would go away on weekends to, you know, other parts of the country and to places where no one spoke any English. And it was just such a gift to be able to talk to people because they were so curious. And they would never guess that I was an American. They would always say, "Where are you from?" And I would say, "Well, why don't you guess where I'm from?" And first guess was always Italy. I have no idea why. Italy, France, Germany, it was every single country except America. They never guessed America. And then when I told them that I was American, they were like, "Really?" Like they'd been told that Americans were mean and nasty and evil or something, and here I was trying to be nice.
That's
like,
strange. Really? And yeah, red eyes. And
exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, in 20 years, I learned two phrases in Chinese. Ni hao.
Yes. Well, I mean,
And xie xie ni.
There you go. See? Hello and thank you. What else do you need?
What else do you need? Yeah, where's the beer? I can say that in 12 languages.
I think a lot of people can understand beer.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you want me to ask another question?
Oh, go ahead.
I'm curious about the title of the book. I can get that it's not about the gun. I do understand what that is. But Lessons from My Global Career as a Female FBI Agent. What would you say are the top three or four lessons that you want to be sure that us, the readers, walk away with?
As far as the title is concerned, I think one of the lessons that I wanted to impart to the reader is that FBI agents carry a gun. You know, we all carry guns, but the reality is the job is not about a gun. It really isn't. And it's so interesting because people in the United States here, they think about FBI agents. They think, well, you're just out with a gun and you're arresting people. And that's not necessarily true. That's not all of the work that we do. And when I would go overseas and I would speak at conferences with where there were people from multiple countries, people would line up to talk to me. And the first question was always, do you really get to carry a gun? And, you know, I wanted to tell people what the life of an agent actually was like. I mean, I obviously can't tell all the classified stuff, but on a day-to-day basis, not everything you do is about a gun. And when I was overseas, I wasn't allowed to carry a gun. So all of the work that I did was strictly without a weapon. I shouldn't say that it wasn't dangerous because I was in some dangerous areas, but not any place where a gun was going to help. And when I got back to the United States, I had been to so many countries and traveled in so many countries where I wasn't afraid that someone was going to shoot me. And I got back to the United States and I realized, oh my gosh, I have to carry myself differently because if I look at somebody cross-eyed at a red light, they just might shoot me.
Right.
And so that's sort of where the title came from.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially in California where they have reloading zones on the freeway.
Well, that's because all the cars are stopped.
Exactly. You have actually the best opening to a book I've ever read.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, the opening to this book is phenomenal. And please, if you're listening, get a copy of It's Not About the Gun, because the first five pages are going to absolutely fracture you. you cannot stop turning pages after that. I'll give a little bit of it, and then I'll let Kathy fill in if she wants to. Okay. It opens with her looking at a foot. And it's a foot that's a delicate foot, and it's got the light red pinstriping on it that so many feet in Asia have, Muslim and Hindu alike, and freshly painted toenails, but it was no longer attached to a leg. And it was a bomber had blown herself up in a guy's office, and that's what the guy showed her was the foot. And it was mesmerized you, did it not? Go ahead.
I'm glad that you really appreciated the foot, and I wanted that story to sort of set the scene as to, you know, so much of my career overseas, but just my career in general, because there are so many things that happen in a career that you just think, wow, you can't believe it's happening. You can't believe that you're doing certain things. But that foot really hit me hard. And because I had been in Asia long enough to realize what a woman's worth was, which is nothing really. And that was bothering me. And then when I saw that foot and that picture, and I heard the story of this woman who, you know, she obviously believed that she had been wronged, her family had been wronged, and her only recourse was to walk into a government official's office with a bomb strapped inside her bra. It was built inside her bra. And she sat in front of his desk and she blew herself and him up. And, you know, they showed me all the photographs of the bombing, and this foot was in the photo, and it was hardly touched. It was beautiful. She had henna on the top of her foot, her toenails were painted. And, you know, a lot of women in that area of the world wear these very intricate, beautiful bracelets around their ankles. And it was just unreal that this woman dressed herself up so beautifully to the point where she henna painted her toenails and then went and blew herself up. And she knew when she walked in that door, she was going to die. And then I sort of had to ask myself, is there anything that I would feel strongly enough about that I would be willing to do something like that? And I wanted the reader to ask that question of himself or herself. And I will ask it of all the listeners tonight. Is there anything that you feel so strongly about that you know that when you walk out the door, you're not going to come back?
No, my answer
would be
no.
There has to be something that each of us can think of, I'm sure.
Well, you know, it's kind of like a suicidal tendency. No, I can't say that I've ever had one, nor would I want to walk in and blow myself up.
Well, I don't mean suicidal tendencies, but to go out and fight for something that you
believe in. For what you believe in.
Yeah. I mean, and my first thought was, you know, look at all of the people who fought during the civil rights era. You know, a lot of them went out and there was no guarantee that it was going to be peaceful or that things were going to end peacefully. And so I think about that and how brave so many people were to fight for equality and their freedoms.
You did an outstanding job in 26 years of climbing the ladder of the FBI. Especially you started what, the mid to late 80s?
87.
87, okay. Well, let's see, the first women were inducted in 72, May 72.
72, as soon as Hoover died, they came in.
Because Jerry was still working for the FBI then when Hoover died. So, but it's from that point forward, I mean, and like she says, and I'm sure you would agree that women still aren't really welcome in the FBI. Not really welcome. More so than they used to be, but not as much as they could be.
I think more so than they used to be, but definitely not as much as they could be. And if I can just sort of, you know, talk about something aside, I was reading the news today about the agents who got fired because they totally didn't pay any attention to the gymnasts who came to them.
Right.
And my first thought was, you know what? They probably just saw these young girls and didn't really believe them and thought, well, I mean, how important is this? And I really do think that some of that happens because it happens to a young girl or it happens to a woman. And unfortunately, there's a level of misogyny in our country. I mean, look at Texas, for heaven's sake. And
yes,
I can say that. I lived in Texas for a while. Not too long, though, thank God.
Yeah, but, me neither. I never lost anything there.
And, I just think that we as a society need to change. Look at the Me Too movement and how women have been coming forward with that. And so, you know, I'm very proud of those gymnasts for what they did. So it looks like Christopher Ray, he's handling it, and good for him.
Yeah, I really like him. I think he's going to do the FBI a lot of good. Although I don't think his predecessor or our predecessor in the Oval Office thought he was going to sway the way he is.
No.
But
I think
I'm surprised he wasn't on the hit list. Well, he probably was.
I read before Trump left office that he was considering firing Ray because apparently Ray wasn't doing what he wanted him to do.
No, he wasn't loyal.
He wasn't loyal. There you go. Yeah,
exactly. Loyalty means a lot.
Hmm.
So, but anyway, you have such a varied, your jobs are so varied. Are all FBI agents, field agents, do they go through what you went through as far as transferring here down to there, to from documents to bank fraud to criminals to
undercover
drugs to everything?
undercover on the yacht.
Yeah, undercover on a yacht. In a bikini, no less.
In a bikini, right. No less.
With Vinny. Was it Vinny?
Yeah, with Vinny. Lovely guy. I had to sleep with him. What can I say?
Don't say that too loud.
You know, no, a lot of agents will actually go to a field office and they'll stay there their entire career and they won't transfer. And sometimes that's their choice to stay. And sometimes if you do want to move up into a different position or work something, a different like criminal, the terrorism or counterintelligence, then you do have to move around. But it is entirely possible to stay in one city your entire career. So, but for me, I really wanted to do different things. I wanted to learn new things and be a little more adventurous with my job. And that's why I ended up moving around so many times.
Yeah, I mean, we talked earlier this week about the Monterey Language School and how beautiful it is up there. And that had to have been just a great assignment for you. And I know those schools are what, 18 months? Is that what it is, 18 months?
When I went through Chinese, I think, is the longest course there, because Chinese is actually the hardest language to learn. And my beginner Chinese was a year and a half. And then I actually stayed out in Monterey for the intermediate course. So I was actually out in Monterey for 2.5 years doing nothing but studying Mandarin Chinese.
Wow. God, that's a nice amount of time to be in Monterey, though. It's so gorgeous.
You know, it would have been really nice if I had had the time to see more of it.
Of course, you're in language school, you know.
Yeah, I mean, people don't realize that that is one tough school. You're in class Monday through Friday for 8 hours. And then in order to keep up with the class, because there's at least, you know, 5 or 6 tests every week, I would go home and study for another 5-6 hours every night. And then on the weekends, I would take at least one weekend day to study some more. So that's what I did.
Yeah. We there used to be a Buckaroo Bookshop in Newhall, California, every year. And there was an actor that was there the first year I was there, Bill Smith, William Smith, and really a nice man. Mm-hmm. He was getting sick at that point, but he was telling me during the afternoon sessions one day that he had gone to the DLI for Russian.
Uh-huh.
And he spoke absolutely 100% flawless, fluent Russian, which is why when in Red Dawn, he was the communist Russian leader in the movie, The Red Dawn, because his Russian was phenomenal.
Yeah, he was a wonderful man.
Such a man. And I know several other people who went to the DLI and they absolutely loved it. They just said it was the best ever. But they said, you know, you're eight hours a day in school. There's no messing around. There's no missing class. you know, and if you're not in school, you're behind a book at home studying with tapes and whatever.
So, you would walk around Monterey and see people with these little white cards with things written on the front and back. And, you know, everywhere, you'd see people standing in line or sitting somewhere. And if you saw them studying these little cards, you knew that they were at DLI, because that's how you learn a language. You put little notes and words and definitions on a card, and you just sit there and you go over them constantly.
Yeah, we learned ours naturally because we grew up with Italian parents. So you'll learn Italian, you know, for self-defense.
I'm envious.
They start yelling and your name gets thrown in. You better know what they're yelling about.
And there for a while when you were a kid, you thought your name was actually Damn It, right?
No. I thought my name was God Damn It. And Hey You. Hey You was a big one. Because there was five of us kids, and my parents were, you know, they were so busy, they'd forget names, and they'd just go, hey, you.
And you all.
Or use initials. That was always a big one, too. So I was JL for a lot of years. But and then you graduated from DLI, and you went back to New York?
I had the choice of other field offices, but my husband is a New Yorker. He grew up in Brooklyn.
Right.
His mother's Italian, by the way. And he said, well, you know, let's go back to New York and live there for a while. And I was like, sure, because I didn't really care. I cared once I got there. But it's a great city to visit, but it's a tough place to live. And even back then, it was a tough place to live. And even more difficult to work in.
Right.
Plus, I had already fallen in love with California.
Oh, sure. There was a part in your book, though, where I heard completely the song Some Enchanted Evening. And that's Mr. Green Eye standing across the bar. And I'm thinking, holy crap, there's a musical in here somewhere.
I did enjoy reading all the references to Keith.
Yes.
And you do write about him. Certainly, we know he's a part of your life, a huge part of your life. But it was so interesting about how he was able to move with you and find work, all the different places that you were working out of. And I'd love it if you would want to even expand on that a little bit more. It was very interesting, his situation there with you.
Before we do that, we need to take a real quick break.
Time for a break.
And sure. Now you're listening to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is the Writer's Block. And we'll be right back after this brief announcement from LA Talk Radio.
Hi, Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. You know, it seems everyone has a podcast these days. So how about you do this? How about you start your very own radio show that goes out live worldwide for nary a pittance? If you think you have an idea that would translate to a radio talk format, then stop waiting. Go to www.latalkradio.com. Click on the link that says Become a Host. Follow the easy instructions, and before you know it, you'll be the on-air live host of your very own talk show on LA Talk Radio. We have 50-minute slots available every day, including Sundays, so don't be shy. Join the many that have started their careers on the air. Join the hosts on LA Talk Radio at www.latalkradio.com.
And we are back with Kathy Stearman. And if you want to call and talk to Kathy, the number here is 323-203-0815. And again, that number is 323-203-0815. And I know Bobby's checking her notes, making sure I'm right. And I'm right. And I'm looking at it right at the bottom of the screen. Okay. You know, we're only cutting down to two commercials tonight. We lost Creative Edge for a little while. So they're regrouping. So we're not going to be doing their commercials for a little bit, but that's okay. But anyway, from Language Intelligence or Defense Language Institute to New York had to be a shocker. And then, but you got stationed back in San Francisco.
I did. let me answer Bobby's question first about my husband, if that's okay. Keith, because I think it's kind of interesting that a lot of people have noted within the FBI that a lot of female agents are not married, or if they are married, they don't have children. And a lot of other female agents are married to other agents. So you kind of have very few female agents who are married to a man who is not with the FBI. And when I met Keith, I had pretty much just decided that I was going to be single, which was fine. Because men are very intrigued by a woman who carries a gun. But once they get a taste of her fur-lined handcuffs, they're not so intrigued anymore.
Oh, my God.
And all you see is their dust disappearing over the horizon. So when I met Keith, he was just a different kind of guy. He's a chemical engineer, and now he's a cybersecurity engineer, and he was willing to follow my career, and I'm incredibly lucky that he did. And he was always able to job at whatever city we moved to. And when we were overseas, he actually was able to get jobs inside the embassy with the State Department. So, and I'm pretty lucky that I have a man in my life who loves women, appreciates women, and respects women. So, kudos to my husband, Keith. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Now, was his name changed to protect the innocent?
Keith is his first name, but we have different last names, so I'll keep that one to myself.
Okay. So you stayed a steerman.
I stayed steerman, yes. I like my name.
I think it's a great name. It's a great title. It's a great writer for a book. Oh, incidentally, Kathy Steerman wrote a book.
Yeah. I always say steerman, like the airplane, and most people go, huh?
Oh, yeah. Well, Go ahead, Bobby.
Here's just a question that's just totally sort of out of the blue, I guess. You had so many experiences. What would you say? We were talking about food a little bit ago before we went on the air. What's the oddest thing you were ever served anywhere?
Oh, that's easy. Oh, my God. When I was in China, as you might guess, they eat weird stuff there. I had to go to a lot of official dinners, like when the attorney general came over and the director, and we would have other official dinners with my foreign Chinese counterparts. And there's a delicacy that they always served, and it's like a sea urchin, and it's about the length of a thumb, about maybe a little bit fatter than a thumb, but it's gray and slimy and looks like just a big line of snot on your saucer, and you have to eat it, because to not eat it would be impolite. So I can't tell you how many of those things I have just sucked down my throat without even taking a bite. I just got it over with. And so that's the worst thing I've had to consume.
So
they're pretty nasty.
Is part of the training as you go into a new area, do you receive training on some of the cultural things, like, you know, in preparation for a dinner, you would be given some advance warning about what's going to be served and how you would go about eating it? Or do you experience these things just, you know, you look around at everybody else at the table and you watch what they're doing?
I did do a lot of that. The FBI does. We're very fortunate to get to go to the State Department's Foreign Service Institute for some training before you go overseas to work in an embassy. And I think I talk a little bit about this in the book, where you learn protocol around an ambassador, how you food, or the baijiu that you have to drink in little thimble size. I swear I haven't been drinking, but
why not?
I thought I would wait till after, because I thought, well, if I drink a glass of wine while I'm doing this, I might start to talk too much.
You have a reputation of having a hollow leg, don't you?
That's what I was going to say, but then I remembered that I have a hollow leg. So anyway. So as far as food, you don't really get any training. You just sort of learn that on your own. And unfortunately, with the nasty sea urchin looking thing. The first time I ate it, I actually bit into it. And
it was
disgusting. And after that, I just picked it up with my chopsticks and shoved it as far down my throat as I could get it and swallowed without biting into it.
Oh,
oh my gosh.
Ew. You know, you mentioned Sri Lankan food. And I found it funny because I went to a Sri Lankan restaurant years ago and I had some kind of a noodle pork rice dish that I took a bite and my mouth was on fire. I was burning from my forehead down to my crotch.
Yeah, your description. Oh, my God, oh yeah.
Oh my God, that was hot.
Oh yeah, I've experienced that.
And they gave me some almost like a milk of magnesia to quell the fire. But it was, holy crap, that was hot.
Oh, yeah.
I've had hot peppers, but man.
Well, and yeah, if that, we take,
it's a whole different level.
Oh, yeah.
If we take a moment to, again, kind of reflect on your writing, your description of the Cinnamon Grand Hotel and your real love of the experiences that you had there and the staff, and just you just give us this amazing view into that hotel. And then you open the paper, was it, on Easter 2019, and you take us into another, we revisit that with you. I found that just heartbreaking. And I hadn't remembered. I actually went online because I was so moved. I felt so foolish. This is only a couple of years ago. How could I not have remembered something like that happening? So do you want to share a little bit about that story?
Oh, yeah. First of all, people don't really, I mean, they may have heard of Sri Lanka, but they don't really know where it is, or at least most people don't. And they certainly don't know that it is one of the most absolutely incredibly gorgeous places on the face of this earth. I could move there and just never leave. But Sri Lanka went through a civil war for quite a few years, you know, maybe over three decades. And there was terrorism and bombings and people dying. And the FBI was actually working with the Sri Lankan government to put some of the terrorists in jail because we were tracking their funding. And the FBI actually did help end that war to a certain degree. Yes, it was a small part, but we actually did. And so there was peace for maybe a decade. And, you know, the whole country had gotten back to some semblance of normalcy. The northern part, which had been really destroyed, people were going back up there again and building houses and hotels and resorts and things like that. And then on Easter morning, 2019, three places simultaneously mm-hmm. were bombed. And the Cinnamon Grand Hotel, which is where I always stayed when I went to Sri Lanka, which was fairly often, the hotel where I stayed in Colombo. And it was in the same restaurant where I would go every morning to have breakfast. And the people were so incredibly friendly. Just wonderful, wonderful, wonderful people. They just were friendly and welcoming and open. And I loved it. I loved them and I loved the whole environment of the country. And it really broke my heart to know that the place where I would go every morning when I would get there and I would sit down and they got to know me so well, the staff, that they would bring me my tea before I would even ask for it because I knew exactly what I liked. And just the thought of that hotel and those people being destroyed and blown up after so many years of peace, it really just broke my heart. And we were talking earlier before we went on the air, like what my favorite part of the book was. And as far as the writing part, that chapter is my favorite chapter, because it was just after I opened the newspaper and I read it, I came to my computer and I sat down, and it literally came out in 30 minutes. And I just felt it so deeply. But another special thing about that chapter is that the quote that I put at the beginning of the chapter is from an Eagles song. And I got permission from Don Henley and Glenn Frey's wife to actually get to use that quote in my book. So I'm very proud of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I enjoyed all of the quotes. I found many of them to I would read the quote and go, I wonder how this will connect. Or if it was just for you, a inspiration that then helped you tell that story, even if we might not see the connection, you saw the connection. There's one right near the very end of the book of Gandhi's. You must not lose faith in humanity. Humanity is an ocean. Right. If a few drops of the ocean are dirty, the ocean does not become dirty. And then you close with, I hope my country doesn't lose faith in the FBI. And I was almost in tears, truly, because this is such a remarkable story. And you're taking us and showing us things that we just, for the most part, we don't know. And I also want to just say thank you for your years of service and the things that you did for us. And
thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do appreciate that. And it does break my heart to see how the FBI has been portrayed in the media for the past several years, especially since Trump, was elected. And, the FBI does need to evolve, but then so do a lot of other organizations, and frankly, so do a lot of private sector corporations.
Right. Absolutely.
And so, I mean, the FBI is a microcosm of society, and, their job is a lot different from a lot of other organizations and companies, but it's still made up of humans, and they make mistakes. Some are mistakes they didn't mean to make. And, some mistakes are because they have a certain mindset. And, I saw that all too often. But for the most part, I really do believe that the majority of people who go into the FBI, they do it because they have a sense of patriotism. They have a sense of wanting to help out a community and basically preserve our democracy as best they can. So when I wrote that chapter, I really wanted the reader to know that, yes, we're all human. Yes, we make mistakes. Yes, not all FBI agents are upstanding citizens, but I really do believe, for the most part, they mean well and they want to do a good job. They went into the job for a reason, not just so they could carry a gun.
Okay, we need to take one more real quick break, Kathy, so don't go away.
Right.
You are listening to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is the Writer's Block. And we will be right back with you after a brief word from Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books.
Congratulations, you finally finished that book. Now what are you going to do with it? Well, as a new writer, you probably do what all new writers do, stick it in the drawer with the other six or seven. Well, why not this time do something a little different? Why not get a hold of Black Dog Publishing and our fine imprint of Tuscany Bay Books? See, we can get that book out of the drawer. We can proofread it. We can edit it. We can format it. We can publish it. We can print it. We can copyright it. And we can get it on the shelf to your friends, your neighbors, your relatives. Hell, even a person you don't know or two or three might want to buy a copy. It's all what it's about. And all of this for less than the cost of your firstborn. So why not give us a shot? BlackDogPublishing.co, TuscanyBayBooks.com, your answer to getting your book published. And right now, we're probably the best at what we do in this industry. Black Dog Publishing, Tuscany Bay Books.
And we are back with Kathy Stearman. And in the last few minutes, Kathy, this has flown by. the only word of advice I have for you is when you go down the hallway, don't open that door.
I never did.
Well, that's because you said you never really wanted to know who was back there.
No. Rumors. There were rumors around the office, but I honestly didn't want to see people having sex amongst a bunch of nasty brooms and mops and things like that. So
Clorox and Lysol.
I refrained. Yeah.
Hey, you have such wonderful anecdotes in this book.
She does. And you just wouldn't want to cut them. You know, I mean, I'm sure the editing process, I'm guessing that probably a lot didn't make it into the book. But, you know, you even have the Stargate shield. You know, you have so many terms for things. And I just found it it's just fascinating. It's a really great read.
Well, I wanted to humanize FBI agents. You know, uh-huh. They see agents on TV and they're all the same, you know, they're, you know, just fax ma'am and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we're human and we can be funny and crazy and vulnerable and you know.
And vulgar.
And bold. Oh, hell yeah.
Well, you know, I don't think there's a government institution where the F word is not thrown around with impunity. It's just like it's part of army speak. It's part of government speak.
Well, so, and then she would title a chapter about a blowjob. That's
exactly. or get out of my uterus. I love that. Yeah. Okay. Here we go. The woman who knows her mind.
Well, this is LA Talk Radio. We can say these things because we're irreverent.
Exactly. And,
Well, you know, I actually have a talk coming up with a government agency, which, you know, I won't name right now, but they've asked me to come talk about my book and talk about being a woman in a man's world. And the first thing I'm going to say is when I go to that talk, I'm going to be like, I will bet I'm the first person to stand on the stage and talk about blowjobs.
Oh, I'm sure you are. You'll probably get their attention, too.
Well, I'm hoping I will, especially if it's right before lunch and everybody's like, hurry the hell up, I need to eat.
I know, huh? Or they're elbowing each other. Did she just say blowjob?
Exactly.
I love it. Well, Kathy, I really hate to let you go, but, you know, we just got a few minutes left. Your name of your book, of course, is It's Not About the Gun by Kathy L. Stearman. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it on all the online booksellers. I did a little research today. And it has been just absolutely a fantastic read. If you get a chance, don't even get a chance. Just make a date to buy the book because it's really worth your while. It's just a phenomenal read and a lot of fun. And not all of it's fun, but it's a great story from start to finish. Kathy Stearman's life in the FBI. And I have to say, I too am proud of you and thank you for your service.
Thank you. Thank you both so much. I have had so much fun and thanks to the listeners out there. And, you know, I do want to say, if you want to get in touch with me, you can go to my website, kathystearman.com, and go to the contact page, send me an email. And I promise I will email you back. I have emailed every single person who's reached out to me. So if you got something to say, you know, let me know, even if it's,
Nobody can say anything bad. I swear to God. Yeah, I mean, this book is just for a first book, it is phenomenal. Wouldn't you say, Bobby?
Oh, yes. And we have to have her on again to talk about her writing process because
I think
there's anyone thinking about writing their memoir, autobiography, we need more stories like this, I think, also.
Is there another book,
I would love
Kathy?
That. Anytime.
Is there another book coming?
I am going to write other books. I have about 5 books in mind that I've written, you know, outlines for, but they are about women, obscure women from history. And I want to write them nonfiction because I want people to know that our history wasn't just built by men. It was built by a lot of women out there. But I have toyed with writing a fiction book about the FBI, and that way I can talk about some of my experiences that, you know, if I change some details and I don't have to show that to the FBI's pre-publication unit. But there are just some things that I didn't get to put in the book that I really want to write about it, because they're just incredibly interesting and hilarious. And you know, it's just like you say to yourself, you just can't make this shit up.
Yeah, I won't. Boy, we've said that enough. Well, Kathy, thank you so much for joining us. And we know it's late there in your beloved New York. We do want to have you come back, if you would, please.
Well, I would absolutely love that.
Get in touch. Well, you have Jerry's email, so contact her and see if you can set up another show. Have you come back. We'll talk about some other stuff, some process, and when you like to write, and et cetera, et cetera. We're going to have to say goodbye. So good night, Kathy. Thank you again. And
good
night. It's just been a wonderful
hour.
Good night,
Jim. Good night, Jerry. I mean, Bobby. Jimmy Bob.
Jerry will listen to the show, so you can say good night to her, too.
Thank you, Bobby.
Okay.
My pleasure.
You're welcome to hang on until we go off the air, and then we'll still be on. So, okay. Next week, we have a returning guest, Mr. Mark Langley. I don't know. You remember him, Bobby?
Oh, yes, I do.
Indian Detectives. Yes. What a wonderful writer. And he will be with us next week. We want to wish Mr. Richard Polinelli all the best. I hope things are going well in Killeen. And we are thinking of you, and we wish you the very, very best. And for myself and Bobby Jean, for the bookie herself, Jerry Christina, for Sam, and for Kathy Stearman, we are out of here.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.